playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Good Saturday morning to you and happy Thanksgiving weekend. Welcome inside another edition of Playing Through. I'm Bob Ballew.
I am Carl Mickelson. Happy holidays, Bob. How are you doing?
Good, Carl. How are you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was quiet with family. We did a lot of Google meetings and Zooming of family and extended family, which was interesting, but somehow held it together. I was curious how that would go, but I think it did engender warm feelings and a sense of togetherness. So it's kind of where we are in 2020, where we do things like that. But it felt somewhat the same of being together, which was interesting.
It is interesting. Yeah, and I'm glad you got to Zoom with family. My parents came down from Dallas, and they don't get out a whole lot or do a whole lot where they're around a lot of other people. So they drove down and spent the time Wednesday, Thursday, Friday with us, and they're taking off this morning. And my dad and I got to play golf Wednesday, which we'll talk a little bit about here in just a few minutes. But all in all, good Thanksgiving. I do want to know, do you get upset? Do you get frustrated? I don't know what the right word is here. With all these rankings of sides in Thanksgiving, are you a big Thanksgiving meal guy? Like, is it you're just kind of surround your day with it? Like, what's your take on all that?
It's a big deal the day of. I can't say that I agonize over it for months at a time, but because, you know, well, there's two sides of it. It's one that our senses are tied to our memories. So things you ate as a kid, you can probably still in your brain somehow taste or remember, and that may remind you of a grandmother or an aunt or something. So I think that aspect is really cool, especially around the holidays. The other is that my wife's family is from Louisiana, so there's all these unusual sides that come around that are kind of popular in New Orleans that probably everybody doesn't have, that are unique. And that was a lot of the discussion this past week. I saw a neighbor making pretzel pie, and I read one of those sort of Mashable or Ranker articles of the most disgusting sides of all time. And those were pretty bizarre. I couldn't even get my head around some of those, how vegetables get into Jell-O, and then they decide to put some sort of snack cracker type thing on top of that. Yeah, so those get pretty bizarre. But no, we've got, you know, my favorite is one that I was talking about with, from the New Orleans side. So a melaton is a chayote squash. It just looks like a green squash, and that basically they'll do a stuffing out of that. So basically it'll include shrimp, sausage, mushrooms, your cornbread stuffing, and then you either stuff it back into the squash itself or you serve it as a stuffing. So
wow,
that's the number one side. It doesn't matter what 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are in my opinion, as far as ranking them, but I get it. I mean, I think it's so tied to our memories and our emotions that we talk about that stuff, but 364 days out of the year, it's probably not that big a deal.
Okay. Well, I mean,
I know you're not a big Thanksgiving guy. I remember that from our talk last year.
Listen, here's the thing. I think it's interesting. We have this, our family has always just had family over for Thanksgiving up in Dallas. And my dad and I have just never craved a Thanksgiving meal. It's just not been something I've done. But I'll say this, last year, my wife did the turkey and it was phenomenal. And this year we bought I think it was a honey ham turkey out of Dallas. My mom brought it down and it tasted great. It was not a cut your normal turkey with all, you know, all the stuff on it. It was just a honey ham turkey. We had some green beans and potatoes and carrots and you know, some of the normal sides, I guess, dressing, stuffing, cranberry sauce. But it's just, I just don't get all that kind of fired up for it. And
it's not a hype thing for you. You're not going to get an individual photo of each item and brag about it. And mine's
No, I'm not. And what's funny is my dad and I usually get a pizza to eat that night, because what, honestly, growing up, what we would do is we'd have our Thanksgiving meal at 1 or 2, watch the Cowboy game at 3:30, and then watch Texas and Texas A&M at 7.
Right.
And which, by the way, I can't get into it. It's, we're not using spinning wheels.
We are on the horn.
I know, right? I just played the damn game already on Thanksgiving night. But what I found funny is we would do that every year, and my dad and I will repeat every year. So every Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I find myself craving that pizza for the next night, like all excited about, well, my dad and I are going to get this pizza. So my mom and dad came in town, and my dad and I were going to go to the golf course, but we had a couple errands we had to run, and we stopped and got a pizza. Well, as it turned out, because of we have a as you know probably by now if you listen to the show, we have a 3-year-old and a 3-month-old, and their schedules for the day, just the way they aligned, we decided we were going to eat Thanksgiving dinner at 5 o'clock. So now we've got this pizza sitting in the fridge, and we're like, what are we going to do with the pizza? So we actually ended up having it for lunch yesterday on Friday as we watched the Texas football game. But yeah, it's just, that, I think that's, you know, you talk about your memories as a kid, and what you kind of gravitate to from that. And it's funny you say that, because my first thought is, we play the squares game where it was like $1 a person. We try to fill up 100 squares within our family of, you know, 15 people at the house or whatever. And then we watch the Cowboy, we eat dinner, watch the Cowboy game, and then watch the Texas A&M game. And that's my memory. So now it's like, you know, yesterday we watched the Cowboy game, but we only, you know, we got through the first half and then we had to eat dinner. Thank goodness we missed most of the second half, 'cause that was ugly. Or Thursday, you know, all these days are mixed up. Yeah, I mean, to me, that's what, like, Thanksgiving's always been football and pizza at night. And then the actual turkey dinner itself was just kind of there. There was no excitement for that.
And you and your dad work in some golf at some point, too, it sounds like. That's more the tradition is more about the things you do than the food is what I'm getting.
Exactly. No, I agree with that. And, yeah, my dad and I played golf on Wednesday. And we've talked about this because he was in town a couple of weeks ago, and I think we discussed this a little bit on the show, but – this is a message to the older folks out there who are trying to figure out exactly what they want to do with their golf game. They don't hit it as far anymore. They can't do the things they used to do. My dad was a scratch golfer. Now he's just trying to break 90 and really struggling with that. It's a mental struggle for him. It's a big deal because he used to be so good. And I mean, I never beat him until 10 years ago.
Wow.
And he was just always that good. And so my dad came into town a couple weeks ago, and he did it again on Wednesday. And we played out at Twin Creek. And he decided 2 weeks ago he was going to play from the Golds. And the Gold tees at Twin Creeks are about 5,600 yards.
Nice.
And so he played a couple weeks ago, and he liked it. He hasn't played since. Came back. We didn't get to warm up. We kind of went straight out there just to go play. And his front nine, he was okay, wasn't great. We got to the back nine, and he shot 41 on the back nine with, I think, 4 pars and 5 bogeys, and just absolutely loved it. Loved, I mean, he was, when he'd hit a drive, even if he was still behind us, he was only 10 yards behind us, or he was right up there with us, or whatever. And I think when you get old, he's 75. So it's, I mean, when I say older, I mean, he's, you know, he's getting up there a little bit, but
right.
He loved everything about what we did on Wednesday. And that is so out of character for him, because he's been so frustrated, because he's been so mad at the game, because he can't play it the way he used to play it. And he plays back with all his buddies in Dallas. And when he plays back, he's 50 yards or 60 yards behind everybody. And then he can't reach the green, and then it's, you know, inevitable he's going to make a bunch of bogeys and double bogeys. So when he moved up to the Gold tees, I think it really opened his eyes to, look, this game is about having fun. None of us are professional. Well, some of us are professionals. Very few of us are professionals. We may right. want to be really good. We may be plus ones or plus twos, and that's something we're going to get into here in the second segment. Maybe in the first, we'll see.
Right.
But even the plus ones and plus twos, You're certainly playing competitions. You're playing for club championships. You're playing for all that stuff. But at some point, this game becomes something different than the grind of a round where you're going to make, you know, 5 3-footers and 5 2-footers and whatever. and it turns to a game that's just for fun. And for my dad, that's happened. And so I thought it was really cool to see him actually enjoy himself. And we had so much fun on Wednesday playing golf. And he shot 41 on the back, and it was the most fun he's had in maybe years playing golf.
You know, and you never know where that point is. I know Bucky's talked about his game. Bucky Godbolt's talked about his game quite a bit, where he's struggled with the distance thing and refusing to move up a set of tees. And I think he's kind of gone back and forth. I need to check in with Bucky and see what, if he's done the same thing. But
yeah, for sure.
We lose a little pop as we age. And golf's a sport. So sports tied a little bit to ego. And I think what you'll see is – We're all going to struggle with that. It's not like, hey, we're going to hit a certain age or certain milestone. And maybe the USGA can help with this. I'm just kind of talking through this, kind of thinking through this. Everybody's going to decide for themselves. Will they do what your dad did and just be 50 yards behind everybody, or will they move up and be comfortable and happy that it's still pretty cool to make pars and birdies when you can? My dad followed the similar progression. He passed earlier in the year at 75. But those last 10 years of like having 7-8 woods in the bag and the usual typical thing we all see as guys get older, just trying to keep up. And yeah, he lost a lot of his distance over the years.
But yeah, no doubt. That's what my dad did too. He couldn't figure out his yardage. It was driving him crazy.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing you see, the progression is, yeah, the 3-iron becomes a hybrid, and then all of a sudden, you know, you blink and the whole bag is virtually woods, and they're not hitting it as far, but their short games become frighteningly good. That's probably what your dad being a good player his whole life, that's probably showing through too. But I'm all for it. And maybe there is something that, you know, PGA of America through the pros can do, and the USGA can just say, and it's difficult because you're going to have the outliers. You're going to have the Bernard Longers and Freddie Couples of the world into their 60s bombing it. But most of us don't. Most of our bodies don't work that way. And if there could be some kind of campaign that just made it, you know, okay, normalized, whatever you want to call it, where everybody was okay moving up. But I tell you what, in the grill room, everybody's got an ego. Everybody's got some reason why they don't move up. And you see it. I mean, every time the golf course backs up, you'll see the group in front of you. It's like, oh, they're waiting, are they? And, of course, the guy hits it 40, 50 yards short of what he was waiting to hit into. And
or chunks it 40 yards.
Kind of roll our eyes. But
that's what cracks me up is, like, when you have guys in front of you that really aren't good and they're waiting on – because, you know, look, they know if I hit this, it's going to get on the green.
Right.
But there's a 4% chance you're going to hit it. And, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about pace of play and that kind of stuff, but I'm with you. It's, you know, my dad was 140 yards out and I was like, it's that little hybrid you've got. You don't have to kill it. It'll just run right up there, run up the hill. Like, and I even said to him at one point, I said, now you can hit the club you're going to hit, or you can hit that little hybrid and you can go up and hit whatever club you want to hit, or you can hit this club. Do you want to have fun? Like, and he's like, yeah, I want to have fun. And I said, is it more fun for you to make a par, or is it more fun for you to try to hit, you know, a club you can't hit 170 yards?
That's the kind of,
yeah, it registers. Like, yeah, I want to make pars. I want to have a chance at birdie.
Yeah. Moving up becomes the inevitable, you know, equation. You know, it's funny. I'm moving all around, you know, based on who I play with and pace of play, I'll move around. We play sets of tees all the time. It's become less of a stigma. Now, I'm pretty fastidious about when I keep my handicap, and that's the other side of the coin, is every time I pull up the handicap, it asks you, was this a casual round, a tournament round, or a match, or something, you know, there's category. I kind of laugh because, like, is there really anything other than a casual round in my world? You know, there's no high stakes that I can think of, you know, but I used to play in a couple of association tournaments that were, you know, the Golf Writers Association and things like that. But those come, you know, fewer and farther between. So most of my rounds are casual. So I think that's what should stick in your head. It should be for fun, but I'm always watching that handicap number and, you know, birdies versus bogeys and others versus, you know, things like that, you know.
Yeah, and the majority of us don't have that competition that we used to have. So I'm not saying in any way it's wrong for you to grind out stuff and play, you know, go try to get – I mean, I want to get my number as low as I can get it. I'm a 6'3 right now, I think, and I'm getting ready to make some changes to my game to try to improve my short game and do some other things. But, you know, just from a general perspective, I do want to be really good at this game, and I'm still young enough that I can really put some work in to become good at it. But there are people who, you know, it's the same thing where if you play once a month or twice a month, but you get mad when you go out, it's like, if you can't practice, there's no point in getting mad. You're not going to be any good.
There's no baseline. Yeah. Yeah. There's no muscle memory. There's no baseline for your strengths and weaknesses.
No, it can be frustrating, but it's a part of it. And you know, it's kind of fun. I played with a really good player, and he gave me a couple lessons and in the middle of the round, and it changed some things and kind of made me hit the ball a little better. And that's actually, you know, I think that's another thing that I think amateurs really need to do is find better players and have them, you know, even if you're just playing a casual round with them, just every now and then say, hey, I don't know if you've watched anything I've done today, but you got any tips that you could help me or do anything? And the guy we played with was really nice and kind about it and was giving me a few tips here and there, and it really kind of changed some things. So again, I think in the end, we all want to be good. We all want to be, you know, grind stuff out and play really fun games with our friends and have that 4 or 5 hours to kind of get away from everything. And I think it's the hardest thing to remember. We talk about it a lot on the show, but have fun. Go out to the golf course and have fun because you'll play better.
That's absolutely true. Yeah. I mean, that happens all the time when you can sort of take score, not so much take score out of the equation, but remember that the worst thing that could happen on the golf course, number one, you can easily forget about and move on from. It's not, you know, there's not a weapon aimed at your head. You're going to survive. It might be embarrassing. It might be very frustrating, and it might fly in the face of everything you've worked on the practice area, but you can always bounce back. I mean, it goes to the thing that people say all the time, you know, amateurs, when you birdie the first hole, you're worried it's going to be a disastrous round because it's just a bad omen to birdie the first hole. I kind of follow that train of thought in the sense that I almost want to get – if something disastrous is going to happen, I'd love to see it happen in the first three holes because you can always fight back. I like to be swinging better on the last 4 or 5 holes than I do kind of the early parts of the round. Hopefully that's the case. You know, it'd be great to be consistent from 1 through 18, but I strive to, you know, not get worse, not let rounds get away from me the way they have in the past. That's one thing I've been working on lately is really try to make your best swings coming in.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because that really is a big thing in golf is as you're going through your round, it's very easy to get downtrodden because you made a couple bogeys or a couple double bogeys or whatever. I think I've told you this before. And if y'all have heard this on the show before, I apologize because I don't want to keep repeating myself over and over. But I have said this before. I realized my game changed for the first time. It made a drastic improvement when I realized that if you hit a ball out of bounds or into a hazard or whatever the thing, whatever, you know, penalty you have to take, the hole's not over. And a lot of times I would just be like, well, that's, you know, I'm going to make a 7 here. I'm going to make an 8 here or whatever. When you realize if I hit a long drive into a hazard, it's 1 in, 2 out, I can get up and down for par. I mean, there's still opportunities.
That's right.
You know, and you start grinding that kind of stuff out in your game, and it really takes it to a different level too. So, and then once I think I got fitted for better clothes, I think that really helped too. I think my clothing was you ask my friends, they'll tell you my clothing was absolutely atrocious. You know, I really kind of started playing more golf in 2011, 2012. And in 2011, I went to Bandon Dunes for the first time. And I go look at pictures from 2011 and 2012, and it's sad. I mean, it's really sad.
The clothes. We're not talking cargo shorts. I mean, it's not. I mean,
no, but it was like khaki pants with pleats.
Okay.
And shoes that were from like 2001 and you can't walk in them. And my feet were torn apart by the time we were done. And I just didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And, you know, that's the other thing that I think really goes along with this conversation is you got to know what you're doing when you play golf. I mean, you got to have some kind of idea of you know, some of the rules, some of the manners, the etiquette of golf. And sometimes that gets away from people. And I think it's, you know, again, it's not as serious as we try to make it. I think golf can be, you know, a lot of people can think it's stuffy for good reason. But it's still a game we love. And I think that's why we're having this conversation right now is we're,
right.
You know, it's not like we're that great or anything, but as we both have started making improvements in our game, it made the game more fun. And it's little things a lot of times that can make you play better.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've done something that you've hit on is I've really enjoyed the past couple, whether it's during the pandemic or just going through the changes we're making in our backyard, I'm really enjoying hitting 15, 20 yard wedge shots and chipping and tripping more and really paying attention to my putting stroke more. Now, obviously it's helped. I mean, that ties directly to scoring. So that's going to help, but I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying practice because a lot of people won't do it. A lot of people say putting practice is boring. I never go to the putting green. There's so many little cool shots you can hit from 50 yards and in, even 20 and in. There's so many options. And I really enjoy kind of just testing my brain and my eye and my ability to commit and all those things. And it's paid dividends. But you can't say it enough. The game's got to be fun. Whatever that means to you as a golfer, you got to be enjoying yourself, whether that's competing hard and that's the only way you do it. You're a big gambler and that's the way it goes. Are you really just, you know, the thing that's hit home this year is it's just good to be out there. Gosh, I played this past Tuesday and Wednesday. They couldn't have been two better weather days. One was more overcast than the other. And I don't even remember which was which, but one was ideal. One couldn't have been more ideal. And the other one was the same temperature, just a little more gray. And I could have shot 140 and it wouldn't have been any less fun to be out there. It just felt good. Every swing, every hole, it both ended way too soon. It was those just perfect days on the golf course. And, you know, it's good to have those. With everything else going on, it's good to have golf and the camaraderie you have with friends and, you know, even meeting new people and even meeting unusual characters on the golf course is all part of the, you know, I think that's what we're missing from other aspects of our lives, whether it's just the exercise or just the act of committing to something that's, you know, enjoyable for a period of time and not feeling guilty about it, you know?
Yeah. And golf's been that since the pandemic started. It's been a situation where you could go out and you can stay 6 feet away from everybody and not touch the hole and all those things that everybody asks for. And that's been nice. You know, you mentioned gambling, Carl, As we take a break here and get ready to move into our second segment, I mean, there's no better way to move into it than talking about Charles Barkley and Steph Curry and Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson. The match 3 played yesterday. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Mickelson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
All right, welcome back to Playing Through on the Horn. Happy Saturday morning to you. Happy Thanksgiving weekend. We appreciate you spending a couple minutes, maybe a full hour with us this morning as Carl and I take you through the land of golf. Listen, not a lot of golf going on this weekend. Our first segment, we just talked about some of the things we love to we've changed in our games and some of the things that make golf fun and make it good and why we, you know, just a little advice for if you get out on the course. This is a we've hit a little bit of a slow time in the game after the Masters. The RSM Classic was last week. There's no PGA Tour. There's no Champions Tour. There's no LPGA Tour. There's not much going on in terms of that. But we did want to hit on the RSM Classic from last weekend. Robert Streb, your champion at 19 under in a playoff. And man, Robert Streb, you want to talk about pulling a name out of a hat and hoping you get lucky with a tournament. Won there 6 years ago, and we'll get into that in just a minute. But first, Carl, the really big thing from the weekend, if you want to talk golf, was the match 3 yesterday. Phil Mickelson and Charles Barkley entered the day at +140 to take down Steph Curry and Peyton Manning. So let's start there. I just want to get your – you watched a lot more of this than I did. I was busy working the Texas-Iowa State game and getting our shows ready for CBS Austin Sports at 6 and 10. And so I didn't get to see as much. I did see a little bit of it, but I didn't get to see as much. I want to get your initial thoughts on the match three. The match one was Tiger and Phil. The match two pitted Tom Brady and Peyton Manning and Phil Mickelson and who's the other one, Carl? Oh, Tiger. Yeah, Tiger Woods. I remember him. Still a good player. So Tiger and Phil, and Phil's been in all three of these because, you know, Phil loves to gamble. Phil loves to have fun. He's really right. Taken on a new role as he hits 50. So what was your impression of the match three?
The match three exceeded expectations as a TV show, as an entertainment production. I found myself watching a lot more of it than I thought it was. I didn't, you know, probably bad thing for a guy that co-hosts a golf show to admit, I didn't do a lot of homework on the match three because it just didn't make sense. Okay, Barkley's a 25 handicap. Mickelson's plus 5, 6, 7, whatever he is right now. He's a pro. He's a five-time major winner. That's clear. The other guys are hovering right around scratch. I think they had Curry at plus one and Peyton modestly, you know, somewhere in the low single digits. Okay. How do you make it equitable? So Barkley's tees were way up. Mickelson, you know, was playing a short golf course that he incidentally owns. Anybody that went to Vegas or DraftKings and picked the other two guys that weren't the guys that won five majors are out of their freaking minds. It's Phil Mickelson. Not 80-year-old Phil Mickelson, just 50-year-old Phil Mickelson. And I don't care if it's – I'm not going to say an ailment or a handicap or anything like that. Charles Barkley is still a golfer. He's still got 14 clubs. He's been playing his, you know, for probably 30, 35 years. At some point, he is going to help. I mean, it's even on paper. Even before we saw Charles, actually hit some very competent and some pretty decent shots out there. It's Phil getting extra shots, and he's already got an ungodly advantage worth those guys. At some point, they're going to break down because Phil missing shots isn't the same as the guys at their clubs missing shots. They're going to have to putt everything out. It's still on TV. They never stood a chance. I mean, once you took pro versus pro out of the equation, nobody was going to beat whoever the pro was. I don't care if it's number 444 on the world rankings. Phil stacked the deck, and I don't think anybody ever early. I think through the broadcast, they kind of realized Curry and Peyton hit some good shots, did some nice things, won the first hole, and really got everybody revved up. Ultimately, they didn't stand a chance. I don't care if it was a garbage can with legs. Phil wasn't going to lose to those guys on his own ball.
So I think maybe the best way I saw this put was Steph Curry's a plus one, and Phil's played as a plus five, but he's probably a plus six or plus seven, like you said.
Right.
Especially when you put him on a course like that. But
it's a plus 10 on the golf course they played. I mean,
and that's the difference in an amateur plus one and a pro plus seven. I mean, he can hit any shot. They could be in the bushes and he'll find a way to hit it.
Right.
And then he gets Barkley. Charles Barkley's had that hitch forever, and he can't hit a golf ball. And Charles has fixed his game, and he's just kind of hitting it down the middle, and he's fine, and there's, you know, there are no issues. And like you said, they went one down right off the bat, and I think it probably kind of – everybody kind of went, ooh, okay, maybe this is – but as that thing went on, you could just sense the – guys, there's no way. I mean, this is – it's unfair to put – not just a pro, like you said, not just – even if it was 444 in the world, but it's not just a pro. It's a five-time major winner in Phil Mickelson, who, by the way, loves to gamble. And so the fact that they came into this thing at plus 140 was stunning, and they obviously won this thing 4-3 with fairly – it was fairly easy. I think that's probably a good way.
Yeah, it was one of those great Muhammad Ali sell jobs. I mean, they put Barkley out there as this big red herring. It's like, well, this guy's my partner. How am I even going to win a hole? I mean, what's
the alternate shot? How are they going to, you know?
Yeah, you guys are scratch. You're both scratch, and once I settled in and I saw. Well, actually, it was earlier in the week when they started showing these hype videos, and I saw, wait, Barkley doesn't have that hitch, and he's playing like 50 yards up on every hole. He only really has to hit an iron in the fairway, and Phil hits from 240 in, Phil can hit every green. You can't say the same. No, while again, Peyton is a great iron player. Curry has got a fantastic long game. You know, they both showed some, you know, you saw the difference between Phil and a one or two handicapper around the greens. You know, in bunkers, they were toast. The putts that mattered were very difficult. I would like to see the behind the scenes. Did Phil have any influence on where the pins were set? I mean, he knows the golf course. Did he, even down to the tee boxes and how the course was set up? I mean, was it all? Yeah. I don't know, but it sure seemed that way, because there came a point, you know, midway through the opening nine, that it was clear with Barkley. He hit one shank all day. He was playing well enough that it was actually like playing a tour player who was getting a couple of mulligans. And that there's no way you can compete with that. I don't care who you are.
I really wish Barkley had made that last putt to finish it off. And I mean, just slid by the hole. It would have been a fun way to.
It was a good putt. But
he, you know, I mean, then Phil steps up, and I mean, it's dead center of the cup, and you're just, that's the way it is with all of these things. I mean, you know, Steph missed some putts that, I mean, he couldn't believe he missed. And, you know, that's what this is for, though. So I guess the next question here, Carl, you know, we did this at the beginning of the pandemic, where we saw, you know, since the pandemic started, we've seen a few of these. We've seen Dustin and Matthew Wolf and, you know, Rory and Ricky Fowler go out and play a little match. Is this something that you think can sustain? If we are not in a, like next year, if we're not in this pandemic, do you think this will sustain? Do you think we'll have a match for? Do you think we'll have a, you know, any of these guys will do anything like this? Because I don't know that it's created the excitement level that maybe they hoped it would. I mean, I think it's been good. I'm not acting like I don't, but I don't know that it's created the must-see TV maybe the way they thought it would.
I don't even know if it's possible to make it must-see TV. I mean, it would almost have to be, you know, almost like a knockout tournament with literally the best players. And like, if you horse racing at one time had match racing before it was deemed inhumane, where it was just one-on-one. Now, if I knew that Dustin Johnson was going to play Brooks Koepka at some point, Rory McIlroy was going to play, Colin Morikawa, or those opportunities were there, and maybe they only had, you know how you do your match at your club. You've got a certain time period to break it out. I agree with you, and you asked a really good question about this happening during the pandemic. I mean, I love it because I'm thirsty for it. I mean, what else am I going to do? I mean, obviously, we had the Longhorn game yesterday, and there's this mattering of football through the Thanksgiving holiday. But that's what's great about the silly season is you've got me where I need to watch something. You know, I mean,
I think
600 time or yeah, I mean,
yeah, I think the gambling aspect is the aspect that's going to change it. I mean, I think that's where
agreed.
you're going to get if you have a match that you can bet on or you have something that's. And I know gambling is not legalized in every state. I just think at some point it's going to be a deal where you can be watching on your phone at your house with your buddies at your house watching a golf match, and you're just betting a dollar on websites. I'm going to bet a dollar that they make this birdie. I'm going to bet a dollar that he hits it further. I'm going to bet a dollar that, you know, whatever. You know, would a Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, nine hole match and then get them in the boxing ring against each other. Would that be something? I mean, there are a lot of things you can pair with it. I think in the end, it's going to be fun to see how they try to take this, because this was something, you know, at the beginning of this pandemic, we talked to Dylan Fratelli and he told us, you know, they were trying to plan on getting some guys around microphones on the course and getting to talk to them during rounds. And that never really happened. It happens on the Euro tour. But it didn't happen on the PGA Tour. And they did set something up where guys could talk if they wanted to, and nobody did.
Nobody wants to.
But I still think that's a great way to get more viewers is, you know, do you want to hear the caddy conversation with the player? Do you want to hear the the behind the scenes talk with the two guys as they walk up the fairway. I think those are the things people want to see. They want to feel like they're a part of something that they normally wouldn't be a part of.
Right.
And that's where the opportunity is there for the PGA Tour to do something with that.
I think that's great. Yeah. It's just, where does that fit in? Could it have a charity component? Because if there was, if I could see the best players in the world play each other head on, head up, I mean, not that we don't see that for, you know, 30 some weeks throughout the year. And the other component is, if we're not in a pandemic, there's very little slack time on the PGA Tour with the wraparound season. There aren't a lot of little windows to have these kinds of things. Yeah, there are certain formats I would watch. Again, if it was the top players, I enjoy that there's a charity component to these matches, that they've been good. I think if you get the right combination of celebrity slash athletes, tour player, it's been good enough for me, but it's hard to pull myself away from, would I really care if it was, you know, if it was 75 and sunny and I could go anywhere I wanted because there was no pandemic, where would this fit on my must-do list? I just don't think, yeah, I mean, probably it would fall down, but would I DVR it and, you know, and come back around to it? And you made the key point, and I think it was very clear with the DraftKings involvements and the cut-ins and, you know, live odds and things like that, that's coming. That's going to be more of a reality, I would assume, across all sports. But, yeah, I mean, golf, I mean, yeah, it's interesting in our sport that you're going to see people able to bet on sand saves, fairways hit, you know, birdies made, all, you know, any number of shots and putts will be able to be bet on live. You know, I don't know what societal issues are going to stem from,
right?
You know, come from that, but it's clearly coming, and it's clearly going to be a thing that does happen.
And
for a lot of people, obviously, there's a market.
Yeah, and to your point, I mean, I think this was as evidenced with the Masters this year. There was not a lot of stress on that back nine. There was not a lot of intrigue on the back nine on Sunday.
Right.
Dustin Johnson pretty much had wrapped the thing up, and so I think that hurt ratings a little bit. We all craved, when they were coming up in the early 2000s, all we wanted was a Sunday back nine with Tiger and Phil. That's what everybody wanted. They wanted to see how those guys, because they didn't like each other all that much. They were rivals. They were all the things that were that went into it. And that's all we wanted to see. And we very rarely got to see it. Then they manufactured it, and they had them play one-on-one when they were a little bit older and they were having more fun. But even then, it wasn't the same intensity. You didn't feel it the way you hope to feel it. So I don't know that you'll ever be able to manufacture it at a sustainable level just because of that. But I do think the entertainment value is high enough that they'll continue to try to do something like this and try to find – you've got to find the guys that are personable, that have good personalities and want to do these things and have fun with the microphones and have fun with, you know, talking trash to guys behind their back when they're not on camera or whatever. Like when Tiger and Phil and Peyton and Tom were playing and – you know, he'd ask if he could mark his ball with a U.S. Open, you know, silver medal instead of the gold because he didn't have one. And, you know, stuff like that is great. That's what I think all of us crave when we watch an event like that. So, you know, hats off to those guys for doing it again. I thought they did another great job of making it a big production and doing some fun things with it. All right, when we come back, we do want to hit on the RSM Classic from last weekend. A couple quick notes from that. And we got – a little bit more golf to talk as well. You're listening to Playing Through on the Horn.
You're playing slow, so we're playing through. Hosted by Bob Ballew and Carl Nicholson. Brought to you by the PGA Tour Superstore.
Okay, final segment of Playing Through on the Horn. And, you know, sometimes when you're in the middle of talking and you can't remember what you're trying to say, Carl, that's what I did at the end of that last break. And I said, we're going to talk RSM Classic and, you know, some other golf. Because I legit cannot remember what the other thing we were going to hit on was. And thanks for reminding me in the break. The PGA Tour and Euro Tour trying to possibly maybe combine forces a little bit as the PGA Tour buys a minority stake in the Euro Tour.
I think it's fascinating in the sense that it seems like it was a move to step off this Premier Golf League. if not permanently, at least for a while longer. You know, it looks like there's going to be, they're going to take a good look at the calendar and see how they can partner on some things and do some things collaboratively with scheduling. But the other thing, and not only just media rights, but creative media, was one of the sticking points the PGA Tour wanted more of the creative product that the European Tour. We've talked about this on this show. Their commercials are just better.
They're amazing.
They're being mic'd up on tour. It's almost like watching like a BBC comedy versus, you know, whatever the schlock CBS is. I mean, I just dug CBS to their big star. But you know what I'm saying? There's a nuance that's just a little craftier, a little bit better that the PGA Tour has, that we either our athletes are making too much money or we're putting them on too much of a pedestal. And what they have, there's just a different interpretation of let your hair down and be yourself than our guys have. And it shows a lot. So I would love to see an infusion of the creativity, whether it's these little just, you know, made for the internet videos or whatever it is. If a little bit of the European Tour rubs off on the PGA Tour, that I think that'd be amazing. It'd be a great place to stay.
I think you're right. And I think we need it in a lot of ways. I think it would be wonderful. That's, you know, we talked in that last segment about Dylan Fratelli talking about the mic'd up portion of Euro golf and how they talk during their rounds about what all's going on. So I think that's all something that we hope we could see a little bit more of. I do want to hit on the RSM Classic real quick too. As Robert Streb won on the second playoff hole last week, Robert Streb is 33 years old and has worked tirelessly to make his game better. But he's just not been a very good, I mean, you know, he's a 367th in the world. That's still pretty right. Good, but he won the RSM Classic 6 years ago. And to see him do that again, to me, to beat Kevin Kisner in a playoff, was pretty phenomenal and just a great story. There were a lot of good stories, though, you know, throughout the tournament. We talked last week, the first-round leader, Camilo Villegas, just lost his daughter in July, and his two-year-old daughter. What an amazing thing to see him back playing golf and playing good golf. He finished tied for sixth. Harris English continues to play great golf. Andrew Landry, the Austinite now, who is making an impact on the tour, finished tied for fourth, 68-68, 65-64. What a way to finish on the weekend. And another name that I don't know if you noticed, Carl, was hanging around up there was Doug Gim. Doug with an impressive T18. He it's great to see those Longhorns up there doing great things. We saw Scotty Scheffler at the Masters, Dylan Fratelli obviously at the Masters, playing some great golf. It was really fun to see Doug Gim hanging around 64 on Sunday, just like Andrew Landry did, to finish off his weekend to tie for 18th. So, you know, they're always there, Carl. There's always at least one or two in the field that will make a run at a top 20. And this week it was good to see it as Doug Gim.
It is. It's good to see them take turns. I hope it's Doug. Yeah, hopefully he keeps that momentum, because there's going to be a little bit of a lag in the season entering into December. And then, you know, of course, only the champions get into the Kapalua event. So hopefully he can kind of hold on to this into January, into February, take it on the West Coast swing with him. It'd be great to see Doug start the calendar year strong. Hey, another thing last week, we didn't talk about it. We talked a lot about Bryson DeChambeau. And we talked about RSM, which took place last week. But around the world in South Africa, did you pick up on the story and the name Wilco Nienaber?
I have seen the name, and I have heard the stories, and it's getting out there quickly what he's able to do.
Well, he's hitting it like Bryson DeChambeau, 341-yard average on tour, which is 40 yards longer than the rest of the tour average, and hit a drive – 439 yards in a tournament, the Joburg Open, which was played last week, at a higher altitude, so that was kind of the caveat, the asterisk to that. But Nienaber is doing Bryson DeChambeau-like things without any of the bulking and the shakes and all of the
other. Have you seen his swing? It's like ridiculously smooth. It's not like he's trying to kill it.
It doesn't look like it's going to go, you know, more than 290. I mean, like a lot
no.
of
the,
just keeps soaring, you know, beyond where your eyes used to looking. It just keeps going. It's amazing. So this guy's doing, as the comedian Albert Brooks would say, on the natch. He's doing it completely naturally. As far as we know, I don't know if there's some herbal root or something he's discovered or what, but he's emblematic right now, at least in the moment, at 20 years old, emblematic of what's coming, I think, on tour. So whether that makes you worried and you need to look at the driver or the golf ball or the course setup or the heights of rough, you know, again, Bryson's just one guy. Wilco Niedauer is just another guy. But it's mind-boggling, that kind of Bob Ballou like length we're seeing out of these young
people. Oh, whoa, hey, whoa. I don't even need a cart path. I need a parking lot to be able to have that kind of length.
That is
get my ball in it, let it roll all the way down the hill. Yeah, that's, you know, that is going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be something we keep our eye on as we move forward. And it's something, you know, even I brought up Dylan Fratelli a couple times, but that was something he worked on in the beginning of the pandemic, was just trying to add yards and trying to add strength. And Nick Faldo couldn't stop talking about it on the Masters broadcast, was how much further, you know, Dylan was hitting it. So there is something to be said for it. But as a buddy of mine said the other day, if you can't chip and putt, it really doesn't matter. So I encourage all of you to start from 150 yards and in and work on that. And if you want to build some strength while you're doing that, that's fine too. But get your chipping and putting down, and then and we'll go from there. All right, Carl, we got to wrap this up. As always,
it was fun as usual.
Talking golf with you, yeah.
Fast hour talking golf.
It always goes fast, and we got to get some more guests on the show. As we've tried to a couple times, find some really unique guys to bring into the show and bring those guys to you. And we look forward to doing some more of that and continuing on our path of becoming better golfers ourselves. It's what we try to do best. Carl, always enjoy it.
Talk to you next week, man. Have a good week.
All right. He is Carl Mickelson. I'm Bob Ballou. This is Playing Through on the Horn. Thanks for listening. Go out and make a bunch of birdies, everyone.